Hi, this is Katie Day and welcome to Creating Ripples, the programme that showcases inspirational women across the globe. Sometimes it is the small acts and achievements that can create the biggest ripples. We're here to share some amazing stories. They will make you laugh, sometimes they may make you cry, they will always inspire you. Today it is my absolute pleasure to be interviewing Sue Bannister. Sue is the founder of Cracking Events, which she has been running for 17 years. During the London 2012 Olympics, she looked after the Austrian Olympic and Paralympic National House, which is one of the highlights of her career. Recently, she organised a conference including an array of host and keynote speakers that included royals, lords, parliamentary members, explorers, celebrities, sporting personalities, and global entrepreneurs. She is recognised for operating large international events, consistently creating partnerships, building teams that flow in the delivery, providing a comprehensive event management service for public and corporate organisations. In Sue's leisure time is quickly filled with her three passions of sailing, skiing, and cycling. Her sailing leads her to compete at international level. Sue is proud to champion students and has volunteered in event management for the past 16 years. Welcome, Sue, and thank you so much for being interviewed on Creating Ripples. It's really, really lovely to be able to showcase you.
Thank you, Katie. It's going to be quite fun. Thank you.
Oh, well, I hope so. That's the plan anyway, Sue, that they're fun. So you've been running Cracking Events for the last 17 years. What led you to start your own events company?
I know that's an interesting question because back 17 years ago, I was working with a lady who had a very low conversion rate. Mm. So what I identified was they weren't actually listening to the client. They actually didn't understand the brief. And so they weren't actually delivering what the client actually needed.
Right.
So I focused on the listening, what was required, if it was going to fit the purpose, to actually go back to them and talk in their language.
Okay, interesting. So what were you, in events management at that time in another format? Were you doing something completely different? What was the history?
No, the history was I've been in the hotel industry and the events industry for over 30 years.
Okay,
so I have the experience. I come from an operational background.
Right.
So we'd be sent through a brief, and when I was working with them, they didn't actually read the brief correctly. So when I set out my business, I wrote down the brief, and it's a brief that we're going to fit. And if we don't actually answer what you request us to do in the initial brief, throw it away because we can't help you because we haven't listened to you.
Gosh, that's quite a statement. Wow.
Yeah. I offered this opportunity to the client, to my previous employers, to take this on board so that they got a higher conversion rate. And they didn't want to. So I said, well, this is untenable. And really, in business, you've got to operate a service that's going to be deliverable to the client.
Mm.
So my business evolved from there.
That's fascinating that your employer wasn't interested in what could make their business better. What an interesting business strategy.
Yeah. Well, that was her. Fortunately, that was my gain and her loss at the time.
Yes, absolutely.
Let's put it into a better kind of placing. Their conversion rate was 55%.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when I was going to see clients, my conversion rate was 95%.
Wow. Amazing.
So, and that's how I built my business, on the reputation of delivering what the client actually asked at the initial inquiry.
Incredible. And 17 years on, you're still going strong, which is testament to actually customer service and listening and delivering what people want is the key to sustainability, isn't it, and success in business.
Well, I think it is, very much so. There are other elements.
Sure. We met initially, how long ago was it now? 2011?
We met in 2011, but I remember you making a very big impact coming near the end. It was about May of 2012. Mm. And you had to pitch. Listened to your pitch and I thought, wow.
You didn't get very far in the evening, though, did it? Moving swiftly on. A very feminine pitch to a panel of very, yes, businessmen in grey suits, let's say no more.
Absolutely. But look where you've come from. And look where I came from actually doing that pitch there. Because now I know that if I want to do a pitch, that's given me a really good framework so that I can actually go in and pitch without having to look at my notes.
It was a very good framework, wasn't it? So it was a very, very good course. So, you know, that was, what, 6 years ago, 5 years ago? 5 years ago.
5 years
so ago. So you'd already been running your business for 12 years then.
Yeah.
What was it about that business program that you believed you needed at that time or could benefit from you? Because you'd already had an incredibly successful business that you'd been running for over a decade.
Yeah, I think in business you have to develop and you have to actually look at the markets. If you remember, we in 2008 or 7, we went into a recession.
Yeah.
Now, because my business muscle was very strong, I was able to keep going in the events industry for a lot longer than the other event companies.
Right.
Okay. But I didn't want to be... The market was shrinking.
Mm-hmm.
And it was shrinking because of the way the business... People within businesses were learning from the event management companies how to do their events.
Okay. I see. Okay.
Other event organisations were going in and scooping up other clients and being quite aggressive. And I don't have an aggressive approach, never have. But what I thought I wanted to do was have a smarter approach.
Okay, interesting, yeah.
And that's why I went on the course. How I got on the course, that was another story.
Okay.
But I felt that the course resonated, that I was going to be able to look at different trends. I was going to be able to look at different markets. I wasn't just focused in of only working and talking and communicating with people in the events industry.
Right, yeah.
How you can only support industry if you understand what's going on in the market.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And that's why I went on the course.
Yeah, really interesting. And what did it deliver for you, what you wanted it to deliver for you?
Well, absolutely. It made me actually value my self-worth. It made me realise my business model is different and unique to other businesses.
Right.
This came over a year and a half later as well.
Oh.
That's how I also got the Olympic project.
Mm.
I went in to do something else when I went in to meet with this gentleman. At Trinity House, and he said to me, look, you're overqualified. There was nothing to do with the Olympics. You'll just be bored. And I said, look, I argued with him for an hour and I convinced him I was the right person to look after the basic project. And day one came along and I got invited into a meeting to listen to the Austrian National House contract. And I listened and I thought, this isn't going to work.
Wow.
And I took them aside of Trinity House and gave them my recommendations. And they took it on board and they handed me the project.
That's such a brilliant story. So if you hadn't persuaded him to take you on for what he thought was a smaller job that you were overqualified for, you wouldn't have got this one. That's an incredible story. Wow.
Yeah, yeah.
Wow. So what were they doing wrong? Why wasn't their proposal going to work?
Well, is any projects about partnerships, and they had actually partnered up with an organisation to find the venue for them. They found a venue and they wanted to put a studio on top of the Grade 2 listed building in a heritage site.
Right.
And they wanted to attach a temporary building on a second floor level to a Grade 2 listed building, Now, in a heritage site, it's really difficult to get permission to put things on it to look over the Tower of London. So I knew that was going to be very costly and very timely, and I couldn't see that happening. I know on a Grade 2 listed building, you're not allowed to attach anything to it unless you're actually working with the heritage people, the listing people. You've got to get licenses. So I could just see costs coming along, and I could see them saying no, no, no. So what I did was I said, look, I'll come up with a solution before we go back to the Austrians and show, because if you listen to them talking, they're talking about communities. So we talk about partnerships. So I turned the partnerships into communities. And I went to the hotel across the road and said, do you reckon we can get a studio on top of your hotel? And they said, yeah, we could do that. So I said, well, can we work in partnership, but can we call it communities?
I love it. And they said, yeah.
Yep. And it just opened up a channel of communication. So I went back without undermining anyone, giving everyone a win-win situation and saying, look, you know, yes, you came back with a great idea. We can do it, but we can do it in a much bigger community.
Brilliant. Brilliant. How exciting.
So, yeah. So like any project, because when you're working with projects on any scale, clients are going to change, have their perception of how it's going to work. And from an event management process of having all these years' experience, I'll look at the process and I can see the picture straight away, and I can see if it's going to work within the environment, the space, the people, the resources. And that is a unique thing about my business.
It's so exciting. I mean, it must be an incredible thing to do, and the job satisfaction when you see something from a client's idea, but they can't vision it, they can't picture it, but you can, to actually seeing it manifest into something tangible and to see the end result and the impact that they that has on their business. The job satisfaction must be huge.
Well, it's great satisfaction. I think over the years, I've actually learned a different way of getting the satisfaction. The most important thing for me is actually seeing the client relaxing and building relationships.
Right.
On an event. I see events now, I look at the event in a different way from going on that course. Was I like to see things flow. Every event is temporary, okay? So I take out that nervousness from people so that I'm creating a solid space so the event turns into something tangible, something that's going to give them the right objective, something where they can actually focus clearly. Because if you're nervous, you can't concentrate properly. You have blanks.
Absolutely, because the conscious mind will take over, won't it? And it will come up with all the reasons why this isn't going to work, and people actually forget that they know what they know.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm taking them to a very positive state. Okay, there are negatives, and negatives and positives can work really well together, but it's actually keeping them in the flow. So that, you know, the strap line of I focus on the little things that make a big difference, they all add up to make a big difference on top of all the processes that I understand as well.
Yeah, yeah. And it's the little things that can make or break any relationship, actually. Whether it's a personal relationship or a business relationship, it's usually the big things you can work through. It's the little things that are going to topple something.
Absolutely.
Yeah, yeah. So important. Yeah. And people do forget that. They concentrate on the major and they forget the minor. And they're so important. Is it just businesses that you work with, or obviously the Olympics wasn't a business, but what other kind of events do you get involved in?
Well, I work with a charity. I've been working with them for the last couple of years, and I do their Sky High Ball.
Oh, what's that?
And it's in London. It's on the 14th of October, and it's at the 8 Northumberland Place, and Harrison Fund charity. And last year we raised £120,000.
Wow.
On the evening. Now, Alex Smith, who's the CEO of the Harrison Fund, set up the charity because it affects boys only. It's Duchenne muscular dystrophy.
It's a what?
Duchenne muscular dystrophy.
What's that mean?
Well, it's where the muscles, every muscle, imagine, feel your heart.
Yeah.
Okay, it's a muscle.
Yeah.
Every part of your body is driven by muscles.
Mm-hmm.
When those muscles break down, you die.
Right.
Okay. Now, a boy of about, normally they get to about 9 or 10, and then they go into a wheelchair.
Good grief.
Okay. Lucky if they get through to 11 or 12.
Wow.
And then they normally, unfortunately, there hasn't been a cure for Duchenne muscular dystrophy. And by the age of 19 to 21, their life expectancy is about that long, unfortunately.
Gosh.
However, Alex has actually, is at the moment in the States, talking with pharmaceutical companies about trials, because we've got trials in the UK, and we're trying to get, he's trying to get pharmaceutical companies talking with other pharmaceutical companies.
Right.
To get this through. So my job, let's step back from that. My job is on the evening of this ball, is not of a normal ball, is, yes, it has the same processes, but he wants people to go there. And, okay, there's sad moments, but he wants to say thank you to lots of people. He wants people to have fun. He wants them to have a party.
Okay.
So my role is to make sure that is really, really a party and a very special evening without losing the focus of it.
Mm.
So I work with all the different suppliers, like I'm working on conferences, to actually look after every little bit of detail so everyone can relax, everyone can have fun.
Mm.
And that's what's special about that evening.
It's amazing. How many people are at the ball?
Now, with that one, we had 270 and we raised £130,000.
Wow.
And that is incredible.
It is. So who gets invited?
It's open to everyone.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You can come along if you want.
Okay, so it's like raffles, auctions, fundraising on the evening.
Yeah, we do. Last year we did Higher and Lower, which was really great fun. We have a live auction. We have a silent auction. We set the silent auction earlier, so you can actually go online and start buying things beforehand.
Okay.
We have a MC who does a few kind of things on there.
Right.
We have a golden, we had a golden ticket as well. So in your bag that you might have a golden ticket and you win something special.
Oh, that's
we
nice.
Had lovely things in it. Ben Ainslie gave us this lovely poster, which was signed by the whole of their team.
Right.
And that's a team very focused.
Yeah.
They're going to win. They're going to bring something back to the UK.
Yeah.
So it's like creating that experience for everyone on the evening.
Incredible. How many years have you been working with them?
This is the fourth year I'm working with them. This is the fifth event.
Gosh.
Okay. But I work, another thing, so you asked me what I work with. A couple of years ago, I was invited, there was a behaviour management program that wanted to be delivered to a company. And they wanted to roll it out to an organisation, but they didn't know how to actually pitch.
Mm.
And they didn't know how to actually deliver it in a way that they could pitch it so that they could win the business. So we were up against some really meaty players, and I taught them how to deliver this management behaviour programme. These were academic people that had studied this management behaviour programme for 7 years.
Wow.
And I took them to a place so that they could actually feel comfortable, sit in the room, pitch, and they won the bid.
Did they? How fantastic is that?
Yeah, yeah, it's brilliant. It's great fun.
And I can imagine, you know, people from, if you say, an academic background, they are not going necessarily going to have the business skill sets. I mean, they're very different skill sets, aren't they? And, you know, and we've done a lot of work with people who are in that, come from that academic field, but don't know actually how to make it the information relevant that everybody can understand it. And that's so important when you're pitching your business, isn't it? It's using really, really clean language as well that everybody can understand.
Very much so. Very, very much so. Yeah.
God, I bet they loved you. They won it. Fantastic.
Yeah.
That's brilliant. Yeah. And I really want to talk to you about this other one, a conference with in Royals, Lords, Explorers, Celebrities. Sporting, I mean, can you tell us what that was about? That sounds unbelievably exciting.
Well, with the Royals, let's go back to Trinity House.
Right.
Trinity House, the master of the house is Princess Royal.
Oh.
Okay. So she was at the house quite frequently. So we didn't sit down and kind of pass notes with each other. But I was there to look after her when she had an event there. So there was quite a few formal events that she would be there at. So I was there making sure. Now, the great thing with Royals, it's like the 9 o'clock news. It happens at that time.
Right, yeah.
So everything is very detailed. So my job is a lot more simpler because I can do it much easier because everyone knows you just have to be very clear about what you're doing when you're working with them. And you've got to follow certain protocols and you've also got to make sure everything is really on time, polished, tidy, mm-hmm. clean. No mucking around, just get on and deliver it.
Yeah.
There's no personalities in here, there's no egos.
Right.
Okay. So it's very functional. Now, where is it different when you're working with a celebrity like Sir Bob Geldof?
Mm.
Actually, he's lovely, really. But with celebrities, they come with egos.
Mm.
So you have to make sure that you look after them in a way that they feel that they're expected to be treated.
Right. Interesting. yeah, okay. I could make a comment there, but I'm not going to. But, you know, kind of the people you would expect to have egos and maybe might deserve to have egos don't. And, you know, yeah, okay. Interesting. Yeah. Very, very interesting. Yeah, I mean, you really have to be able to read people, don't you, in your job?
Yeah. And I had an event where I had Jack Johnson, Joe Johnson, which is Boris Johnson's brother.
Right, yes. Okay.
So he walks into this conference room and I look at him and I said, oh, you look like someone I know. And he's got a very straight face, you know. And I went, okay, not going to crack a joke with you on this one.
Yeah.
And he was running the... a trade conference.
Mm.
And I looked after him and it was detail. I mean, everything. We had an office running, we had live streaming, we had everything going with this event. And the moment everything had finished, he showed me his colours. He showed me that smile. He showed me that fun side of him. But he'd not worked with me beforehand.
Mm.
And he also had to have that very focused mind because he was representing the company, country, not
yes.
the company.
Yeah.
He was looking to do trade with international companies, and this was critical.
Yeah.
So what I gave him was the opportunity to relax so he could do the trade business.
Mm.
So afterwards, when it's all finished, he valued it, and it was good fun to be working with him.
He looks so much like his brother, doesn't he?
He does. He's just a slimmer version.
You know, like a slightly shorter version.
Yeah, and you didn't eat the pork pies.
brilliant. So can you tell us what celebrities or sporting personalities you've worked with?
Well, actually, I know Angela Rippon's got been on TV this morning.
Oh.
And I've stuffed a cable up the back of her skirt in one of the presentations. We had an award ceremony and she was working on that. And she is absolutely, what you see is what you get.
Yeah, I bet.
She is absolutely brilliant.
Yeah, I bet she is. So have you worked with Bob Geldof?
Yes, he came to a conference that I was looking after. It's called a trust conference, and the pin could drop in the room.
I bet.
Everyone wanted to listen to what he had to say.
Yeah.
Really, really nice guy. Very, not like what I thought he was going to be like at all.
But he's very charismatic, I think, isn't he?
Yes, he is.
Yeah, and very serious about his message as well.
Yes, I mean, there were a few bleatifs in there that we had to kind of
yeah. Yeah, he doesn't mince his words, does he?
No, not at all, no.
But, yeah, he is pretty. I would imagine, I've never met him, but I would imagine that he is a man, actually, who doesn't have much of an ego.
No, he doesn't. Not at all. He doesn't, and he's full of, he's got sincerity, and yeah. his message. Well, he was talking about the Trust Conference, and he went off on a bit of a tangent, but his tangent took you back to why he was talking up there, why he was up at the front of the stage, why he was a key speaker.
Right.
So, yeah, no.
He's very compelling as a speaker, isn't he?
Oh, God, yes. Yes, he is very compelling. Yes. Absolutely.
So how important is it for you as the event organiser to find the right keynotes? Because my assumption is, and I could be wrong in this, but my assumption is that actually the keynote could make or break an event, however brilliant the rest of the event is being run.
Yeah, now this is where I go into the companies much earlier on and sit down and talk with them about the strategy of their business and their delivery.
Right.
And I say, what is your objective? Why do you want to get that speaker? Why is that person going to resonate with your organisation? Are they going to understand your message?
Right.
So I'll sit down with the strategy and go through the team of seeing how the business is going to work, if their business is going to be able to deliver what they're going to say prior to them actually booking their keynote speaker.
That's really, really important, isn't it? Really important. So you get the flow that you've been talking about rather than the jarring and the disconnect. You want it to be in flow, to be collaborative and to be smooth, and that everybody really understands the purpose of everything that's going on in that event. And if there's any jarring, unfortunately, that's what's likely is what people are going to remember, isn't it? They're not going to remember everything that where it ran smoothly. They're only going to remember the bit that didn't.
Oh, God, yeah, absolutely.
It's human nature.
Absolutely. And then just before the keynote speaker arrives, normally, hopefully a couple of days beforehand or a month beforehand, they've had a copy of the objectives. They have the information, and then they can talk it through with me if they want to.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
So what are you working on at the moment?
I've got a couple of projects at the moment, but I'm actually working on my book.
Ah.
So my book is not, it does have about events, but it's my last 3 years of experience of what's been going on in my life outside of work.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
Yeah. And then I've got a big event for 1,000 in September.
Gosh.
And then I go straight in. I go into my silly season there. I've just finished a book launch for one of my clients.
Yeah.
Very touchy-feely client. Lovely. You either get him or you don't get him.
Okay.
And so really, I'm also focusing. I've got a few things going on with my sailing. I'm training up because I've got my Europeans coming up.
Yeah, tell us more about that, that you compete at an international level. So are we going to see you at the Olympics?
No.
Oh, okay.
No. Realistically, Olympic sailors are people who are very young.
Oh, okay.
Very, very young.
Fair enough.
You know, if we put myself on a platform with Ben Ainslie, I would be pushing his boat out from the jetty.
Okay, so fair enough. I get your picture. So where do you compete then, and how do you compete?
Okay. Well, I've competed at national and world level.
Gosh.
Crewing up in the up to the top 20s in national fleets. World fleets. National fleets, we've won national races.
Gosh.
We finished in the top 10.
Wow.
So yeah. And I normally sail with my husband, but I've been sailing with him for 16 years. And I just decided 16 years was enough. And it was this year I wanted to do it on my own. So I've got another person crewing me. So it's us getting together as a new team.
Wow. How did your husband feel about that?
Well, he's actually, I actually, he didn't really have much of a choice. In the nicest way, I booked him out to sail in the World Championships in a 505, a different type of boat to the boat I sail.
Right.
And now he had his first sail last weekend in it. And so he's got his World Championships in July. And I've got my European Championships in August.
Goodness gracious, what a couple. That's amazing. Yeah. I mean, I love the water. I live by the sea.
Yeah.
And I absolutely love the water, but I like looking at it. I have absolutely no desire whatsoever to be on it or in it. So where did this love of the sailing come from?
Okay. As a little child, my parents used to put us in a boat in our kind of cots, and we used to bob up and down in the Solent.
Yeah, that will do it.
Yeah, so you either like it or hate it.
Yeah,
I like it.
Wow. I think I've been sailing once, because I lived in Southampton for 8 years, including highs. So, you know, just literally.
Yeah.
Right, and I think I went sailing on my last weekend before I left Southampton and moved back to London. And I spent the last 16 years living by the English Channel and haven't been on it once. I think I dip a toe in every now and again, but I haven't even been swimming. Mind you, you have to be honest, you know, the English Channel is hardly the Pacific in Southern California. No, if I lived in LA, things could be very different. Oh my gosh, well, good on you. I mean, that is amazing. It must keep you fit.
Well, I'm training. I'm doing yoga. I've got a really good Pilates teacher.
Right.
So that's fantastic. And you have to do other sports to actually keep fit.
Mm.
And I don't call it exercise, but this morning I've been out for a lovely walk.
Mm-hmm.
And I go cycling a lot, because I told you I love cycling.
Yeah, yeah.
And I also very passionate about my skiing. So I do stretching. I do, I'm not running at the moment, but I will start running very soon.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll build my time on the water. It's a bit like a marathon going running. You've got to build your time on the water.
Okay.
So you've actually got water time, so that you, not because you can't, because you can't go to the toilet on the boat generally, but you can sort that out. Anyway, that's another story.
Yeah, that's for another interview, Sue. It gives shiwi a whole other meaning, doesn't it, really?
Yeah. You've got to get your mind sorted so that you're actually concentrating. Because when you're sailing is very, very parallel to business.
Mm.
In the sense that you've got to be able to evaluate the start, you have to evaluate the wind and the tide and the conditions and the other boats around you.
Interesting.
And then you have to balance, and then you have to keep the wind in the sails correctly. So you've got all these different things going on in your mind. So you've got to shut out everything else out. So it really gives you a really clear focus as you're going up. And you can visualize, you have to visualize yourself going around this course at the most efficient way possible. And in business, you want to do things efficiently, don't you?
That's really interesting. And that also, it's the agility of the mind as well.
Mm.
Isn't it? To focus to see and to vision where you want to be, how you're going to get there, most efficient use. It's also a lot of team building as well, because you've got to have really, really clear communication, haven't you, with teammates?
Yeah, as long as you've got someone else in the boat, you've got a teammate.
Absolutely. And it's how you communicate with that other person.
Yeah.
And I'm guessing ego has to be put to one side.
Yeah, you do. Ego and disappointment. So if you get something wrong, you've got to say, let go, move on.
We've
got to keep focused.
So
it's really, really important that you just keep, you can talk about it when you get back ashore, but on the water you're in real time all the time.
So it's very much living in the present moment, isn't it? Living in the now.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
If you've done your planning and your preparation beforehand, then you can step into the present time when you're actually doing it.
Yeah. If you actually interview a lot of world champions, a lot of them will say, I won that because I did the right planning. Okay. And it is, you know, at the start line, you've got to keep yourself calm, you've got to keep yourself ready and in the right place. And it's all go from there.
Gosh, fascinating. Do you transfer the skills that you have in your sailing into running your company?
I think I do. I was actually at the weekend, I was running a I was running the racing for a small event.
Mm.
And I absolutely transferred those skills.
Mm. I think we forget, don't we, sometimes in life that it's very easy to put our life into boxes and actually forget how fluid our life is and how one part of our life will influence usually another part of our lives, and where we can share our own skill set across all of our life. And I think it's easy to forget that, actually, to forget just how skillful we are as human beings.
Can I jump back to when we were talking about celebrities, about people making impacts, and mindsets? Because I'll set the scene. It was a March. I just finished a conference, and we had Deborah Veal, who rowed across the Atlantic. Right. Now I'm sailing, and it's 4-6. My husband and I are a little bit underweight. We're sailing on a lake. We've got three races back to back, so it's blowing, it's really cold, the wind's coming down from the north. We've got water splashing all over us, but we are having an absolute ball.
Mm-hmm.
Because I could get, after my 3 hours sailing on the water, I knew I could go in and have a shower, and I still didn't have to row across the Atlantic.
Yeah.
And it is in that mindset that people can get you into. So her experiences took me to that mindset of putting it into sailing, and I use that same mindset when I'm working in business.
Very interesting.
Inspiring.
It is inspiring, and also to recognize that if we're in something that may not be positive, rather than giving it more energy than it deserves, actually saying to ourselves, this too will pass.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Because nothing in life is permanent, is it?
No, not at all.
Fascinating. We've got about 3 minutes left, Sue. Yeah. So what is the future holding for you? What's your next project? Or you talked a bit about the book. Do you want to talk more about that?
Yeah, the 6th of October, please save that date.
Oh, okay.
So it's My Journey, My Choice.
Okay.
And over the last 3 years, I've actually just recovered from secondary cancer.
Right.
And I'm pleased to say I'm unique. I don't have cancer.
Wow. That's amazing.
And that is achievable by a lot of people. And this is what my book's going to be talking about, is how I've achieved this with the support of medicine, mindset, and nutrition. And boy, I've been really lucky also with my friendships. Without my friendships, none of this would have been possible.
Gosh.
So this is what my book is all about.
How amazing. So you are completely cancer-free?
Yes, I am.
That's incredible.
Yeah.
That is incredible.
Yeah.
And so, is it about the balance between traditional medicine and other ways of healing?
Yeah, very much so. Because when I was with my consultant... And she said 12 months ago, when I said to her about working with nutrition and working with the mind, she said, that is not proven.
Okay.
Now, the last time I went to see her, she said to me, it is proven.
Oh.
So the shift in the medical world is absolutely amazing. Now, there's a lot of people out there going banging a drum about, oh, the medicine people don't know anything about nutrition. I don't bang those drums. I actually share my knowledge that I've got to actually just put positivity out there so other people can benefit from it.
Well, that's an amazing energy to write the book from, and also to take the book out into the world. So is the 6th of October your launch date?
Yes, it is.
Ah, fantastic. Is it written?
I'm in the final editing.
Right.
I've got the front bit to write, and then put my pictures and my diagrams and my charts, because over the last 3 years, I've set out lots of different processes to look after me.
Right.
And in setting those processes out, they have helped me.
Okay. And is it self-published, or have you got a publisher?
I haven't got the name of the publisher, but I have a publisher who will do it. So it's pretty much self-publishing, but it is using a publisher.
Okay. Yeah. Wow. And you going global with it?
Well, I hope so. Yes, please.
Cool. Yeah. Yeah. Well, you do know this interview goes out mainly in North America, don't you? So wow. If anybody is listening who would like to talk to Sue, then where can they get in touch with you, Sue?
Well, they can contact me at Sue at cracking-events.com.
Okay. And is that your website as well?
And my website is www.cracking-events.com.
Fantastic.
So it's the 6th of October, and that's my my book launch.
Well, your book launch in the UK is on the 6th of October, but who knows when the North America book launch will be, Sue?
Oh, absolutely.
So I can interview you again after you've had your North America book tour and see how that went.
Bless you and thank you. Love to.
Well, we've come to the end of it now, so that seems like a very good place to stop. So thank you, Sue, so much for your time. It's been an absolute joy, which I knew it would be. And so much to talk about. And I'd love to have you back maybe next year after your book has been launched and just see where you're at then. If you have time to fit me in, of course.
Oh, well, absolutely. Well, I'll have a look at my diary in the new year.
Yeah, let's do that. I'll need to get you in now. Oh, brilliant. Thank you. So this has been Katie Day with Creating Ripples. Listen in and be part of the revolution that is rocking the world. As women, we are the new future. We are awesome, fearless, fabulous, inspiring, passionate, courageous. In fact, we just rock.